The concept is in business is that you have to identify that there are things in your business that only you can do, right? So you have to guard those things that only you can do. And then you have to, you know, let software or other people or college students or somebody else do the other stuff so that you have that time to do the things that only you do, which is what builds your business and gives it the character that you wanted.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Well, hello again, everyone. It's great to be back with you again for another chat with inspirational teachers from around the world. And this time, not one, but four other teachers. I have a feeling we might break the internet, everything might explode, but look, I'm going to cross my fingers and hope that it's going to work out okay today. You're listening to episode 92 of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, and a special welcome if you're one of my Inner Circle Piano Teaching community members. My name is Tim Topham, and I'm the host of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, and this is the place to get your weekly dose of piano teaching and music business inspiration. Today's show notes and a full transcript are available as usual at timtopham.com/episode92. Now, a couple of quick reminders before we start. We're coming up to Piano Teacher Conference Month around the world. It's July, right? Everyone's got conferences. It doesn't matter where you are, it seems. So if you're in Australia, in less than a month from now, all the piano teachers from here and New Zealand will be heading to the University of Adelaide for the APPC. That's the 10th to the 14th of July. Now, I recorded a Facebook video about this with one of the organizers. So if you're interested in that and how to get connected, head to my Facebook page. Just search for Tim Topham on Facebook and you'll find it. And if you're in the United States, then you've got two opportunities to hang out with me and other creative teachers. Firstly, at the 88 Creative Keys Workshops in Denver. That's July 18 to 22. And we're going to be talking a little bit more about that a little bit later in today's show. And then I'll also be returning to present at the NCKP, that's Chicago, 26th to the 29th of July. I hope you can come and hang out with me over there. For information about that conference, head to keyboardpedagogy.org. And I will be organizing some meetups, some drinks, that kind of thing with readers and listeners of the podcast. So if you're interested in finding out about those events, just head to timtopham.com/meetup, M-E-E-T-U-P. All right, let's get into it. As you know, June 2017 is business month here on the blog and in the Inner Circle. So I'm very pleased today to be chatting with four guests, all superstars of music teaching business in their own right, and here to answer lots of questions about marketing and studio growth. My guests today are four independent teachers from across the United States who are successful business owners, musicians, teachers, and program creators who provide business solutions and training to both individual teachers and multi-studio owners through their company, the Music Mentor Group. Many of you will have heard about them, and it's an absolute pleasure to welcome them to the show today. So welcome, Deborah, Robin, Kathy, and Natalia.
Hi.
Thank you.
So firstly, I'd like to go around the table and just get a quick intro from each of you. Where you're based, what does your studio look like, numbers, and whether you teach groups and that sort of thing, and what part of the music business area is your specialty? I'm just going to go in order of who's on my screen top to bottom, and so that starts with you, Deborah. Would you like to kick it off?
Of course. So I'm in South Texas. My husband and I own two music stores in South Texas, and we both have music degrees, so our business model for our music retail store is really centered around teaching people to play. So that's why we started creating schools within our stores. And so we have two thriving schools going and have for, well, one store has been alive for 38 years and the other for 25.
Wow.
So we've been in the business a while. Taught lots and lots of people how to play, which is awesome. I have created a group only teaching program. That's all we do, group piano, all ages. We have the idea that every life needs music. And so we're just constantly trying to create new, fresh programs that will draw more people in you know, maybe people that wouldn't be necessarily drawn to a traditional approach to learning like I had and loved and thrived in, but it's not for everybody, you know? So we've just created a really neat program that is drawing students from 4 to 94.
Oh, wow.
Our adult program. Yeah, our
you
adult
have a 94-year-old?
Amazing. Oh, yeah, I've taught some really older people, which I love. And, you know, that's a really good question. What part of music business is your specialty? Because as the other mentors know, to run a music business, you have to wear a lot of hats. You know, you have to learn a lot about all kinds of different things. But I think my specialty is I love building things. So I know how to build group programs. I've helped a lot of people around the country do that, music stores. So I think that's really my specialty is how to start with nothing and create something. And group is my specialty.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Deborah. We might pop over to Robin now.
I'm in Surprise, Arizona. Yes, that's really the name of the town I live in.
Oh, it's Surprise.
It's in the Northwest Valley. Yeah, it's Surprise. Surprise. And so my studio is called Musical Surprise because I couldn't not do that. We are a large multi-teacher studio that teach every type of instrument. Private lessons, we see about 500 students every week. And as a music therapist, I really wanted to have something for everyone, regardless of what kind of learner they were and where they were in their study, beginner, advanced, intermediate, special needs. So that's what I've tried to do. So we are mainly private lessons, but we do have group classes. We do preschool music, music therapy, adaptive music. And we've done a lot of ensemble additions in the last few years to give our students the next step. And then I'm a little backwards from Deborah because I had a large student base. I opened a store because my students need stuff and there wasn't one in my city. So we have a full service, full line music store. And we also provide all the rental band and orchestra rentals to our school district. So
wow,
my studio has spread wide.
and diversified in the process.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
And what would you say the key part of music business strategies that you help other teachers with? What's your specialty?
I really love creative marketing events and ways to make, I always say that I really want my students to feel like being in my studio is more than just a 30-minute appointment on their calendar each week, that they're part of something much bigger. And so we really strive to do that. And I think it makes a difference in how we reach the community and become a part of it, as well as how we retain the students we have.
Mm, that element of community and creating community around your studio, it can have a huge impact on retention and ability to build your studio. So that's great. Well said. So can we just go, we'll go to Natalia. Sure. And we'll see if there's anything you can adjust at your end, that would be awesome.
Okay. So I am currently in three different locations. We are in New York City. We are in Greenwich, Connecticut, and Los Angeles. So we are only piano. So when I, you know, decided to expand and wanted to do more, I think I did not even have the brain power to want to do more than just piano. And I love playing the piano. And I felt like that was something that I was really good at. It came natural to me how I wanted to teach. So I decided, you know what? I know I can provide quality if I stay with piano. And I've just kind of expanded piano in that sense. I get the question a lot where people ask me, oh, well, how did you decide to do, you know, open up the studios in the cities that you did? It's just every place I've ever lived in. So if I've been there, then I will probably open up a studio there. And it's worked out really well that way because when you're in a neighborhood, you understand the neighborhood, you connect with other people in the community. And that's kind of what has been helping me grow. And I want to say that my main music business strategy is, you know, because there are lots of piano teachers out there. And I happen to choose big cities to be in. So there are always tons and tons of competition. And it's always in the back of my mind, how can I continue to stand out? And so my music business strategy is always about giving people a well-rounded music experience and also kind of like outside the box experience, things that they never thought could be possible. I want to give them that and show them this is why you got to come here. So, yeah.
Fantastic. And I would imagine that anyone that can run a profitable, successful business in New York is probably doing pretty well. That sounds like a tough market.
There are three music conservatories in New York City, and there's probably like a pianist on every block. So we do have to work hard.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you very much for that. Kathy, we'll come back to you. Hopefully you're looking a bit clearer in my video. So over to you.
Okay, good. Hopefully I fixed a problem. So I'm in Cedar Park, Texas, which is a suburb of Austin, Texas. And, you know, I was saying we're the live music capital of the world. So we've got a lot going on here as well, music wise. And like Robin, I'm mostly a private lesson studio, but we also have group offerings as well. So for our group classes, we do some preschool classes. We have some elementary group classes, just starting some adult classes as well. We have an enrollment of about 250 to 300 students, kind of depending on the season. And we also have a satellite studio is what I call it, at a private school where we go in and we serve their needs for piano lessons as well. And that helps us retain the student load that we have without having to add on extra space. My eighth year of business, I really love it. I would say probably my specialty would be the tech side. I love pedagogy. Pedagogy is what I've studied my entire career. But when I was working on my doctorate, I petitioned the university to, instead of doing a foreign language requirement, because when you complete a DMA, you have to pass fluency in French, Italian, or German.
Really?
And I didn't know that. Yeah, it's pretty much universal. And I had, at that point, I was already okay in one of those languages. So I petitioned my department to do some computer language classes instead.
Oh, clever. That would have been the first time I'm sure they've ever heard that before.
Absolutely. And yeah, and I was actually the first one who's ever asked. And thankfully, I had a very forward-thinking advisor who worked with me and was able to make that happen. But I think, you know, I can kind of consider that the point of which that launched me being very comfortable in tech and website building, and doing all sort of online things. So I've just really enjoyed that from that point on. So
what language did you end up learning?
Well, this was a long time ago because I finished my DMA in 2013. So we were doing, you know, like website design and Dreamweaver using HTML and all that.
Oh,
you know,
wow, okay.
You know, eventually moved over to WordPress and all that. But it was mostly that kind of design versus strict coding.
Yeah. So brilliant. Well, look, I'm really interested to know how the four of you came to work together. Why you decided to form a group?
Well, it is a really interesting story. And it just really also speaks about collaborative learning and developing things online together. Because it was about 2 years ago, we all were, along with three other business owners, were invited to Dallas, Texas to meet and just have a session and kind of discuss what we could do as a group, the seven of us, to make a difference in the music community. And after that, I don't know, we were there a couple days. I remember I got a message from the person that was putting it together. And I read it and I thought, that sounds interesting. And so since I'm older, I said, I got to call her. So I called her and we had a wonderful conversation about it. And I just felt, you know, I didn't know the other six people. I just really felt like I should go. And it was my birthday weekend. So I thought, you know, what the heck, go. So I did. And so after we met together and started talking about business options together, three of the people, including the person that started it, decided no, that they did not want to. But by then, the four of us had started something, you know, just getting to know each other. And we just began to kind of online meet. In 2 years, we've only been in the same space twice. But every week we work together just like this. And so it's been, you know, just really fascinating to see that we actually have built a business, another music business, but online, not in the same space. So that's been really fascinating. I was thinking about that word mentor, because that, again, I just think that's a really wonderful word, especially coming out of the music business. If you are a music education, you think of someone who's your mentor, right? I don't know about you, but there's some people that have crossed my life that I just owe a debt to. You know, they were major, you know, major, that just kind of shifted my whole thinking and made me realize there was more I could possibly do than I imagined. And those are mentors. And so I think that's why we like the word, because in our careers and education, that makes sense. So if you transfer that over to the business world, especially working with musicians who, like us, we didn't have any training in business. I mean, we all started our business just because we just had some kind of spark, you know, that we felt like we had to do it, this entrepreneur spirit inside of us. And then we had to educate ourselves along the way. So, you know, we just thought this is a great way to help others. And to me, the word mentor, it's almost like, you know, let me come side by side with you. Let's arm in arm and let's figure this thing out. And so to me, that's kind of the next step. There's so much information out there for everybody. It's just coming at us in all directions. And so how do you organize that? So I think that's the service that we're providing. It's helping people do that.
And I'd like to pick up on that thread of that we almost fall into teaching a lot of teachers. We don't fall into teaching, but we fall into the business side of it anyway. We decide to start teaching and suddenly realize that we're a business owner and we're effectively our own CEO. And I'm finding that teachers seem to be becoming more comfortable seeing themselves as business owners now than maybe 5 years ago or 10. And so I'm wondering, are you guys finding that? And do you think that mindset shift is important?
I do. I think social media has made it, that's how we've all got to know each other, you know, it's made it apparent that we all have those similar problems if we aren't running our business like a business. You know, you can't think of this as a hobby if you're trying to make a living at it. And these Facebook forums where everybody talks about it all the time, they all have the same problems because it's the business piece that is often missing in our education and our training. And until we experience it and realize, oh, we're not alone here, I think the dialogue is more common now. I mean, do you guys agree? I think.
I do agree. And, you know, I have to add that this past year, I did 2 talks at the University of Texas to the pedagogy class and graduate piano majors. And one of our talks was completely off the business topic. But as soon as the students got us together in that room, they started picking our brains about business. They wanted to know, how do I do this? How do I get started? How am I going to make a living? Oh, I'm about to graduate. What am I going to do? So I think I'm really glad we've started this conversation about business, but I think that we have so far to go. And we always tell each other, the four of us, I wish we had us, you know, when we started off, because, you know, like Deborah said, we learned it on the go. We went to classes, we read books, we figured it out ourselves. We consulted with people.
We made mistakes.
we made mistakes and we learned from them, right? So it's a growing topic, yes, definitely.
I was going to ask about whether university pedagogy classes are including more business training. I'm guessing that it's probably pretty slim pickings somehow. So it's good to hear that some of you have been going into universities and giving that advice. But the fact that students are there asking for guidance on this, it's like, oh, this is, you know, this is what we need. And I'm a big exponent of helping music students think entrepreneurially. If they don't do that, then they're going to suddenly wonder why, even though they're the best musician in the world at something, that they can't make a living from it because they're perhaps too narrow-minded or they're not diversifying their thinking and that sort of stuff. So I'm with you. I hope that it becomes more common in universities. So look, let's get into it. What's the biggest mistake you see studio owners making with regard to their businesses?
I'm going to piggyback on that little thought process we were going down there because I think what I've seen is that they're not understanding that they have to be willing to invest in themselves. They have to invest in themselves. So whether that's, you know, Inner Circle, whether that's us, whether that's, you know, what all these different things that are, they need to invest in themselves, because it's like, to me, it's similar to teaching. We lay a foundation with our students. They have to lay a foundation. And it's not just marketing. It's not just, you know, it's not just recruiting and getting new students. It's like, what are you going to do with them when you get them? How are you going to keep them? How are you going to keep track of them? Your systems, your, I mean, there's like this whole big pile of things that goes with it. And so just being understanding that little by little, it doesn't have to be a big, heavy cost on them, but they are going to have to spend some money to make some money.
Yeah, it's a business investment, isn't it? Effectively,
in it is.
Professional development up front. And any business owner would tell you that you have to spend money, as you say, to make some money. And in this case, it's spending money on your own development, right?
Yeah, and it doesn't stop. I mean, I've been doing this a long time. Just this year, I purchased a pretty high-end business course and took it online. And I loved it. And I learned so much. It's unbelievable. You know, so it never stops. You have to be a continual learner. Just like if you're going to be a good teacher, you got to keep learning. It's the same thing.
And do you think it makes people work harder, focus more, get more out of things when they have to invest some money, when they've got some skin in the game?
Absolutely. Yeah, got my attention.
Natalia, you're laughing. What were you thinking then?
No, I mean, Deborah's 100% right, that you have to continue to invest in yourself. You have to continue to invest in your business. And I think on the road to investing in your business and yourself, your business will start to transform, which, you know, you start to have to make decisions that you probably didn't have to before. And what I see some of the studio business owners out there do is that they're not confident in their decision making, you know, because it feels so foreign to them. And you need to take a step in whichever direction you want to go in with your business and know that it is going to be a good decision. You're doing okay and you're doing fine. And so from my end, all of the investing that you do is supposed to continue to help you make those right decisions.
Mm. And hopefully make fewer mistakes too, because you'll be guided.
Fewer expensive mistakes.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So apart from investing in your own training, what are some other important things for teachers to realize about running not just their studios, but their business?
For me, it's not having enough systems in place.
So what do you mean by systems? You know, what are we talking about there?
Well, first of all, what are you doing with your business? You know, are you doing private? Are you doing group? So first having your plan in place, right? And then like Deborah said, you know, it's not all about marketing. If you market and you get 200 students, what are you going to do with them? How are you taking enrollment? How are you invoicing? How are you communicating with your staff if you have staff? How are you choosing repertoire or method books? If you don't have systems in place, as we know, you know, we've all made these mistakes, your business can take over your life. Yeah. And then you're not taking care of yourself, then you're not happy and your family's not happy. So having systems in place means, you know, like I was writing in the blog post, Sunday night, I'm not doing anything. Ding, I get a text on my phone that I got a registration count come in. I didn't do anything. That just came in through my website. Things like that. The more automation you can have in your business, the less you're doing a tedious task, the more you can spend time on growing your business, on doing pedagogy, on teaching, on training your teachers, all the things that we love as musicians. So that to me, I've seen people just get overwhelmed and not know how to organize and systemize their business.
And I imagine that doesn't have to include expensive automation or more staff. It could be as simple as creating checklists for people to follow and a framework and that sort of thing. Would that be right?
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. I was just going to say, doing things the same way routinely and having a process in place, the procedure of it, it streamlines things so much simpler because there's no surprises. There's nothing that was forgotten. This is the way I do things here. And having some flexibility and adapting are going to be important as your business grows. So just because you've done something a certain way doesn't mean you need to continue doing something a certain way if it's not working, you know?
Absolutely. And Kathy, I think you're spot on with regard to we should be doing what we're good at, and that's teaching or helping our other teachers if we have multiple teachers. That's what we should be doing, not sitting there emailing invoices and creating spreadsheets and things, right? And look, I've got a post that has come out this month about how I changed to recurring automatic monthly billing using a little bit of software. So I never send an invoice. I never have to worry about getting paid. I don't have to create reports. And it doesn't cost very much. And there's a whole lot of work gone. So I really encourage people, other teachers who are listening to this, to find out ways to systematize. You know, it's just so important. I'm really glad you brought that one up.
I mean,
The concept is in business is that you have to identify that there are things in your business that only you can do, right? So you have to guard those things that only you can do. And then you have to, you know, let software or other people or college students or somebody else do the other stuff, so that you have that time to do the things that only you do, which is what builds your business and gives it the character that you wanted.
Well said. Natalia, what were you going to say?
No, I was just saying, I think sometimes people think that if you grow, it's going to be more work. And if you systemize it correctly, if you have a good process, it shouldn't. It shouldn't mean a lot more work for you. It should hopefully just mean more profit. So.
So I'd like to get a bit of a number one top tip from everyone. And this is on improving studio retention, because I think this is sometimes a forgotten part. We work really hard to get new students in our studio, but keeping them there is so crucial. Otherwise, we've got a leaky bucket. So back to you, Natalia. Can I start with you? What's your number one tip for retention this time?
Sure. So I think it's really important that the students in your studio, they're happy and they enjoy learning. But I don't think that is the answer to everything, just because we all know that learning, there's ups and downs, right? You can't always be up there. So what happens if there is a moment of down? How do you make sure that they're not going to leave the second it gets a little tougher, or they're having a period of, you know, time that doesn't work out as well? So what I like to do is I like to plant seeds kind of in the parents' minds about how this isn't just recreational. This isn't just learning to play the piano. This is a music education. It's about their mental well-being. And so when you start to plant seeds like that and make them see bigger picture, seeing what it would be like if they learn this instrument and become an adult, how that can affect their lives in the long run, it helps with retention. It helps with the tough times when they're not 100% happy.
And that's about ongoing communication with the parents, I imagine, setting them up for that vision of the future, perhaps a copy on your website about your view of what teaching's all about.
Yeah, I like to throw out lots of personal stories at recital times or workshop times. I just gave another story in our LA recital about how I never envisioned that playing the piano could mean having a good time with my kids, right? Like, I never thought I would play the piano and my kids would happily sing along with me. And you paint that picture for them, you know, don't just look at now, think about later on. And so, yeah.
Nice. Kathy, your retention tip.
Yeah, I have two, if that's okay. I want to piggyback on what Natalia was saying. I really think, in my eyes, my job is to educate the community, and especially the community that I've built within my studio. And that may take on a lot of forms. And one of the ways we do that is through our recitals. So you may have a parent who sees that second method book and hears their child playing at a level two, and they are so impressed, as they should be, you know, when their child has reached that level. But for them, that may be the pinnacle, and they may pull their child off and move on to soccer or ballet. But so we intentionally program our recitals and pop in some of the more advanced students, have a teacher perform. The parent sees that. And it's not always, I want my child to be like that, but it's a view of that is what is possible. And we get that a lot. And I make sure at the recitals to always acknowledge our older kids, you know, and say, thank you for being such a good role model for the younger ones and for, you know, staying through in your lessons through the time in your life when you're extremely busy. So that's one. And the, you know, the second one I was thinking about, which is similar, we have programs that have evolved with our student base. For example, we're a multi-instrument studio, so it's not just piano. So we were having trouble with our middle school students leaving because in Texas, band is it. So marching band for the football games, if you're not, you know, if you're not in that in middle school, you're not in the cool crowd. So we had a lot of our, even our great middle school pianists leaving to form, to be in the band, because that's just how it is. So we've started developing some like chamber music ensembles for the kids, some duet classes, some trios, and we just really have gotten a lot of interest because all of a sudden, you know, we're building that community. Even the kids that are in private lessons are coming together. They're working together. We've added on preschool programs that we didn't have previously because we saw the need with younger siblings. So our programs continue to grow. And I think it was, I think Deborah or Robin, I can't remember who was saying this all ago, you have to be willing to change. So if you see something that will work with your studio, try it out. And that may help with your retention.
And it may not work, but that's okay. At least you're trying and you're moving forward, right?
It's okay.
Yeah. I love the simplicity of the idea of having an older student play at the younger student recitals. I've been a fan of that, and it's a very simple thing to do. That's an easy, quick win for any studio owner. And then making a point of what they've achieved, maybe even having them, if they're good speaking, just say what it means to them that they can still play these older students or that sort of thing. Nice tips. Thanks, Kathy. Deborah.
So more on communication. You know, I just can't say enough about that either. Everything they've said so far, I totally agree with. And I think also another piece of that is when you have a multi-teacher, you have multiple teachers working for you, with you. We have about 45 to 50 classes a week that we're having. So that's a lot of teachers, a lot of people in and out, a lot of groups. So it can't just be me standing up at the recital doing what I call my recital talk, which I have a really good one and it works and I get interaction and it's awesome. We get people to sign up right there. I mean, but that's not enough. So I actually spend time training my teachers about this topic that, you know, they need to be aware of what the parents are thinking. They need to be talking to the parents about this themselves, not just me. You know, and so we do provide handouts and things that they can share. You know, I give them things that they can share, but I'm spending time helping them understand that just because they work at a store, in a school, in a multi-team, it doesn't mean that they shouldn't have a relationship with the family, right? They still need, just be like, if somebody was coming in and out of my house, I had 40 students coming, I would know the parents. I would talk to them. You know, so just bring that over into a multi-teacher. Sometimes that gets lost because they think, oh, this is a big store. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not my little studio. I'm working, I'm helping someone else with their studio. Yeah. So it's just it's empowering them to see the benefits of that personal connection, I guess.
Yeah. And that has to do with them also, me doing a really good job of communicating my vision. Mm. What is it? Why? Why are we doing this? Why are we here? You know?
Which comes really, back.
If they can,
Yeah, it comes back to what the others were saying before about, you know, it's got to start with the vision, the why you're doing stuff.
The why, yeah.
So I'm really keen to move on to an issue that many people are talking about these days, and that's group teaching, all the talks on group teaching. So firstly, what does group teaching look like, and is it something that we should be considering in our business mix?
May I start with what it doesn't look like?
Yes, please.
Good. So it doesn't look like what we saw in college, where everybody's in a lab at a piano. They've got headphones on. There's this unit there that's, you know, muting everybody. And, you know, it's just like, it's really like a whole bunch of one-on-one lessons. It's not that. It's not necessarily a once-a-month theory class, although it's nice to do. It's nice to get together. It's not really that. Matter of fact, the way I explain it to parents, it's just like they're in an orchestra or they're in a band. We play without headphones, open air, I call it. Let's play open air. And so we're playing like we're in a band. Everybody's at their own instrument and it's a group event. So that to me is my way of doing it. And there can be ensembles, of course, and rock bands. We do that too, but like with Kathy and Robin, they've got the instruments. You know, they don't have to use backing tracks. They've got the drummer. They've got the bass player. You know, we do backing tracks and rhythms on the digital pianos and stuff and just build our own band. And then also I was remembering all the schools that I've started programs in, after school programs, you know. So those are some things that I see developing, you know, around the country. And it doesn't have to be a group of 10 people. I mean, I'm fortunate. I'm in this situation where I've got big classrooms, lots of pianos. I can have big classes. It doesn't have to be that. You can have the same thing with 4 or 6. I don't really like to go below 6 because I like the energy of more. But, you know, if you only have room for 4, that's cool. Just, you know, start there. So that to me is what it looks like. And it looks like kids learning how to work together, how to help each other. I have a real open classroom where, like, if some their neighbor needs help, the kid can go over there and help them. When they get out of control and they're just too hyper, I'm like, okay, guys, over here on the floor. We get on the floor, get on the circle. We're like, hey, we're a band. We have to respect each other. You know, we talk about it. We name our band. So they're just like learning how to work together as a team, which is letting them experience collaborative playing at a really early age. And yeah. I love that.
And it's about life lessons in that case. We hear all the time that the research says we should be teaching those soft skills, collaborative work, problem solving, critical thinking, creativity. They're the kinds of things that students in groups can experience, I guess, more so than one-on-one.
Yes, and that's then we in turn, as we were just talking, we make sure we communicate that to the parents. You know, yes, they're learning to play, they're playing chords, they're learning to read, but they are learning all these, they're experiencing all these other benefits that will actually help them later in life.
Mm. And I know many people will have taken on a transfer student and you could thump a drum kit right next to them to try and keep them in time and they won't understand that they've got to listen and play in time with that beat, right? So the fact that group students are learning with others and playing at the same time and they've got to keep in time, I think that's a huge experience in itself.
It's huge. Yeah. And we start it with day one. We don't wait till they can do something. We just start day one, cue them, teach them to listen, play. And then from then on, and that I hear teachers say to me, well, gosh, how do you get them all to play together? It's easy. Mm. Easy. Just cue them, right? Just cue them. They can come in. Yeah.
And what about the business side of group teaching?
As far as cash?
Yeah. So,
no, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about it in an income sense. I mean, you can make a lot more money teaching groups for the same amount of hours of teaching, right?
Yeah. But I must say that in my mind, that cannot be your motivation. Is you have to believe in it. I'm in, you know, I believe in it. I believe in the benefits. I've seen it. I've seen lives change. I've seen people experience just so much joy making music with other people. So, I mean, you got to have that inside of you. You can't just start and say, you know what? I've heard about this group stuff. I'm going to try it. And I tell teachers, if you come into it that way, you might as well just save your money and your energy. Don't try it. You've got to be able to look a parent in the eye and say, you know what? I believe in this. I think this is perfect for your child. You know, you have to be able to say that and believe it. And yes, yes, obviously you have eight people in class, you know, you times that times your tuition. And I mean, we charge just as if it's a private lesson. So you take eight times that. I mean, yes, that's more money. It's more work. Mm-hmm. You have to do a lesson plan. There's a lot more to it, but yeah, the money's there, but I think you have to approach it actually from really believe in it.
Mm. Oh, that's great. We're very well said. And what about just picking up on that, transitioning to group teaching? So this might be the 10th time a teacher who's listening to this has heard about group teaching and they're like, all right, already, I'm going to try this. I'm passionate. I love it. I think there's lots about it that I love. But what do I say? How do I do it? I know this is a big topic, but has anyone got a few steps to consider without a step-by-step plan, but some things to consider when switching, if you think you're going to switch to group?
Yeah, I think first what I was just saying is number one, you got to do your homework. You got to decide, do you want to do rock bands? Do you want to do class piano? You know, what do you want to do? What size and all that kind of stuff. And I've helped a lot of teachers do that. I've had teachers actually send me their roster and then I like help them say, okay, see these four people right here? They'd be perfect together. Because private teaching, and I taught private for many, many years, you're so used to looking at the student, or looking over here at the piano, like they're sitting there. You're, you know, just all your attention is on them. You get four, six, eight people in the room, your mind has to think different. You have to see everybody as one and then still see their individual, which that's a skill you learn. That's a skill you learn. So sometimes it's hard for teachers to see that, hey, really, I've got four kids that are in book 1B. They could be learning together, you know? And so part of that is that just sitting down with your roster and kind of figuring out who would fit together. Obviously, starting brand new classes with brand new kids, that's the easiest thing to do. I also tell teachers at some point you have to decide if you're really going to do this, you're going to stop taking private students. I mean, you have to guard your time. You have to decide because you can always fill up your half hour slots. So at some point you got to say, okay, you know, and you may have some more advanced students. You want to pair into, you can do partner lessons. That's good too. You know, just something that they get to make music with others. So yeah, that's how I would do it. And then another thing that they might want to consider is find the right time to make the shift, right? Summer's a really good time to make the shift. This, you could say to parents, this summer, I'm going to, you know, transition into group. This is after you've already given them all the education they need about it and they're okay with you. This summer, I'm going to do it. You're going to give me a chance to show you what's going to happen. Because really, the proof is in the pudding. It's like the kids are happy with it, the parents are going to be happy. Mm. So summer's a good time to say, okay, we're going to start making the shift so that by fall, you're kind of up and running.
Okay, and I just want to, that was great. And I just want to say, teachers, don't change for this summer in the United States. That's only like a month away or you're already there. I think you were saying is this is a few months worth of talking to parents, explaining the benefits, explaining how it's going to look, how it will work. I mean, it will take ongoing work over a period of time before the switch actually happens.
Yeah, they could keep their, if they wanted to keep the kids in private, the more advanced that they've had for a while. But I mean, I would, now that I've taught like this for a long time, I would never start children like with book one just by themselves anymore. I just wouldn't do it because I've seen how they love it. And then so they can keep a portion of their studio in place and then just bring in a couple of new groups, brand new kids with this new curriculum, whatever they choose. And that gives them a chance to get better at it and practice and, you know, learn how to do it themselves. Mm, so it's gradual. Yeah.
Now I do see that Robin's back now. We missed out on your little retention tip. So just skipping back to that and then we'll move on to a final few questions too.
I think something that we do pretty well is we really are always communicating with our students to give them what they want. That's how my studio is structured. I mean, a lot of my guitar players and my drummers aren't walking in the door going, I can't wait to practice alone in my room forever. And the piano kids aren't sitting there thinking, I can't wait to learn every scale. They're thinking of these other things that they want to do. And so I build my studio around trying to give them what they want, in addition to what I know they need, but a compromise. So we don't just teach one way or one direction. We teach what the student wants to learn in ways that they do learn. So we cater everything specific to the students, and that helps my retention. If they want Rock Band, I give it to them. If there's always something to be working for. It's part of that community piece that I mentioned earlier. So there's always something going on and a way to be involved so that it's not just that 30-minute appointment. That's the easy thing to give up because soccer has a tournament and there's competitions for dance that I need to work for. I give them a reason to maybe choose us as one of the options because it's more than just that 30-minute appointment.
Mm. And I think the days of teachers prescribing everything that a student does without any reverse direction feedback, I think they're long gone. So yeah, I'm really glad that you brought up it's retention is just about, it's about content as much as anything else.
Yeah, you have to hear them. You have to hear them.
Fantastic. All right. Well, another big topic that I know teachers are going to want me to ask about is hiring other teachers. And this question comes up a fair bit. When studios grow too big or they've got big waiting lists, I guess you've got two options. You go to a group format and you teach more students, or you hire other teachers to work with you. So could one of you give me some tips? Let's say we go down the hiring other teachers path. I know, again, a very big topic, but just a few things to consider when hiring other teachers.
I hired two
today. Oh, did you? There you go.
I just want to mention that it's not a numbers game. So it's not like you own a sandwich shop and you can make 50 sandwiches by yourself. And now all of a sudden you have 100 customers needing sandwiches. So you're going to hire an additional person to make another 50 sandwiches. I think I see that mindset a lot with teachers, and you can't. What happens then is you're trying to replicate yourself, which is only going to lead to frustration because you're never going to be able to hire somebody as good as you are. Never. And so you're going to be frustrated with the person you hire. You're going to end up firing them, going through like 20 interviews. So I think we have to get that out of the mindset that it's not a numbers game. Instead, it's a vision. What do you want to create? If you want to be bigger than just yourself, what is your end goal? Or what, you know, what's your 1-year plan? What's your 5-year plan? For me, it was, I wanted to bring quality instruction to our city, and not only piano, but in other instruments. That may mean I have a violin teacher who plays in the symphony who can only take on 3 students. But when she comes and takes on those 3 students, she gives so much value to our students that needed that. So I created a space for education. You know, Deborah wanted to create a space that revolved around group and all the wonderful things that go out around group. So you have to have your vision in mind first before you hire teachers. Once you have that in place, the students will come. You know, if you have the waiting list, great. You can put them in with other teachers. But you also have to understand, you know, if you're trying to replicate yourself, if you have that waiting list, it's your waiting list. They're not, if you're trying to do that, they're not going to want to go to that other teacher. They're going to want to study with you. So you want to have to make sure you begin with the end in mind, that kind of the philosophy. What is your vision? How do you want that to work? And then, of course, we've got a whole course on hiring teachers and training teachers and all that, because that's a whole, like you said, that's a whole discussion in itself. But it's just what you want.
Yeah, I'm hearing more and more from all of you that what we must remember to do is think bigger picture and stop and plan before we start implementing things for most success, right? Yeah. And what about hiring freelancers online and what we call virtual assistants? That word is thrown around a little bit. Good idea or bad idea?
Well, I do it. So I think it's a great idea. So,
and I couldn't run my business without them. So I'm a big proponent of it too.
Right.
And it's a great way to be able to take some of those repetitive processes that you do and that you shouldn't be doing, as we said before, and giving it to someone else who can probably do it much more effectively than you, and it clears your space and your timetable to work on the things you should be working on. So, yeah, another thing to consider. Okay, so look, in starting to wrap up, I want to just go quickly around the table and this virtual table and get everyone's just one top little marketing tip or strategy that you've seen work really well. So how about we start this time with Natalia?
I would like to think that we do lots of outside-the-box events, you know, really want to... I mean, I guess it doesn't matter where you are in the world, but especially I think like New York City, where they've seen it all, you know, everything, all, I mean, you name it, it's probably there. So I always want to try to do something that I know other people aren't doing, or it just takes too much work to do. And so for us, that's kind of like our advantage, the outside the box things that we do. We did last year, we did a four piano concert. I literally rented two other, and I wasn't like, no, we're not doing uprights. No, I'm going to show them what it looks like to have four grand pianos in a room. But that's what will impress them. You know, you go that extra step. And then we just did like a dance and piano collaboration where I brought in a modern dance company to do something with our studio. So anyways, that's kind of my big top thing that I do.
Love it. Robin?
I think a lot of teachers are really good about putting their information out there, but they're not quite as good about getting information from potential students back. I think that's a miss that a lot of people do. So that's something we really try hard to do, is always not just be distributing info, but collecting info back at events and in the store, and then following up on those leads, not just with one phone call, but multiple follow-up attempts. I follow up with current students, I follow up with former students, I follow up with potential students. Sometimes it's a yes, sometimes it's a no, but you never know if you don't follow up. That's how I build my list, like 5,000 people, because we're constantly collecting and following up. And people will sign up and say, oh, I've been getting your stuff for a few years, but we just weren't ready. But now we are.
Yeah, that's right. It's that multiple touch points. You know, sometimes people need to hear about a brand a number of times before they go, okay, I'm ready to buy. I'm ready to enroll.
What work is, I called them and then they didn't call back, and then that's it.
Yes, you know? Exactly. Yeah, it's that follow-up, and which can all be automated, or a lot of it can be automated as well, and still be quite personal when you use a little bit of software. So, a topic for another conversation. Deborah.
Well, along with the multiple touch points, I agree with that. I think that's super important. Your copy is very, very important. So it's like, what do you say? I mean, you could have a really pretty ad, but what do you say? I see a lot of times people are like, you know, I have state-of-art equipment. I have 3 or 4 degrees. I have. Well, really, it's like, to me, it's discovering who my customer is and what value, you know, what is value to them. And so I try to take it from the other way. By joining this program, your child is going to do this, 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 and this. You know, this is going to, for adults, this is going to change your life. You know, bringing music into your world is going to change your life. It's going to give you a stress-free hobby. You know, you're going to come home after work and sit down and play the piano. You know, stuff like that. That I think copy is king, at least.
And copy, by copy, you mean text, words, the words you write.
Your text, yeah. Yes, your message, your pictures, obviously, too. Mm. Pictures are awesome. I think that's why video is one of the reasons video has become so important, is that, you know, I can talk and share from my heart, you know, that you try to share when you write, but it's not the same.
Mm, absolutely. And Kathy.
The tech side of me is going to come out, and I think it's really important for you to have a website that when you Google lessons in your city, you're popped up there, you know, on one of the first rankings on that page. And having one that's functional that people can know about who you are, like Deborah was saying, the copy, Have it be a way that people can get in touch with you, come meet you. So if you have the funds to hire somebody to build a great website for you, that's great. If you don't have the funds, that's okay too. Just learn how to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've learned pretty much everything I know about podcasting, blogging, my online business from podcasts and blogs, online information. You just read and you try things out. And sometimes things don't work, but that's okay because you learn from it. What a fantastic way to wrap things up. And look, I'm so, so excited that the Music Mentor Group, these four fantastic women with me today, are joining forces with my inner circle this month on a fantastic business marketing course, which is just for piano teachers. This is just such a fabulous resource and talks to so many of the points that we've discussed today, but with, you know, worksheets, discussion from you guys about how it works, and a whole lot of bonuses. So showing what your websites actually look like, what does your copy say? You know, all of that is in this course. So can we just get a sneak peek from one of you, a couple of the things that teachers will find in this course?
We're actually really, really excited about all the things that we have in this course, because it's literally like you can pick and choose and hear so many different ideas from different viewpoints, because we know your businesses are not the same, right? There will be things that resonate with you a little bit more and ones that, you know, probably later on. And we also love the format of the course on how we present it. It's kind of like, if you've watched the show, The View, where the women are sitting in that semicircle, that's what we do. Because we wanted to have a conversation with you. You know, we didn't want to just tell you. And so that's kind of the format. And it touches on a lot of the things we already, you know, talked a little bit about in the podcast as well. But it's about building your image. It's about all these different online strategies you can use. And even with print, how will you use these online strategies along with print strategies? We think it's really important that, you know, in-person marketing is still very powerful. If you meet someone and you can show them that energy you have, they're going to get converted. You know, they're going to go to your studio. So then once you get all these students, this was the other big topic that we all shared today, was once you get them, you got to keep them, right? You don't want to keep working on getting new students. So there are so many different ways where you can do internal marketing and retention that keeps them coming back.
Absolutely. Yeah. I it was funny when Deborah told me about The View, and I'm like, oh, that sounds kind of familiar, but I don't really know what that is. And then as soon as I watched, as soon as I saw you girls around the table with your coffees and everything, I'm like, oh, yeah, I can picture this now. Yeah. But look, I think, you know, some of the biggest value, while it's fantastic, obviously, hearing all your different viewpoints, the worksheets you've created and the examples that you give away of all the things that you've done that will suit various different teachers, which is why the four of you are such a great combo. I think that's where lots of the value is in this course. Now, this course is going to be available free to Inner Circle members, and we're actually going to be running a live webinar to share some of the ideas on the course, so completely free tips and strategies, and answer as many questions as we can about this. And this is going to be held at a time to be confirmed, but it's going to be around the weekend of the 17th and 18th of June this year. So if you're interested in signing up and you're listening to this podcast, then head to timtopham.com/training. And we'll link you up to the sign-up page. And a replay, of course, will be available if you can't watch it live. Okay, last thing, we must mention the fact that we're going to be hanging out in Denver for your one-day business workshop. And this is part of the 88 Creative Keys workshops run by Bradley and Leela. Most of you will have heard about it because I've been talking about it for so long. But one of the days is with these four fabulous women, and it's focusing on business. So, and I think there's a few places remaining, but I doubt they're going to last very long. So it's on Saturday, July 22, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And it's at the Colorado Christian University near Denver, Colorado. So just a quick overview, what are a couple of the things that teachers are going to learn in this course?
Well, it's going to be everything we've been talking about, but I think the real gift and the real The goal is that when each person leaves, they have a plan of action. Okay, so again, helping everybody wherever, we'll discover where each attendee is, what their vision is, what their goal is. We're going to do everything we possibly can to help everybody move to that next step. But again, I think it is about taking the time to, we'll have an action plan format that they can work through individually. We're going to help everybody. It's not going to be a lecture thing. We're going to, it's going to be very interactive, breaking up into small groups. The four of us are going to move around the space. And yeah, it's going to be great.
And I'll be there in the audience learning a heap from you guys as well. The cost is just $150, and that includes a light breakfast and a fully catered lunch, your action plan resources, and spending the day with this fabulous resource of teachers from around the United States. So if you're interested in that, as I say, I don't think many places are available, but hopefully you'll get in quickly. 88creativekeys.com will be the link that you need. All right, well, look, we're going to wrap up now. I did want to say that the Music Mentor Group offers one-on-one consulting for studios and studio owners, as well as a heap of online courses and resources. So to find out more about what the Music Mentor Group is about, you can head to themusicmentorgroup.com. Nice and easy to remember. So thanks, everyone, for being a part of the conversation today. It's been so great to meet you all, and I can't wait to do it properly over a glass of wine in just about a month. See you later.
Bye.
All right, a quick reminder that the show notes and a transcript for today's episode will be at timtopham.com/episode92. And next week, we're going to have the amazing Chantelle Duffield from Studio Expansion live on the show to talk all about nurturing and retention of your students. More on this. And she's going to talk about how she automates this process of new enrollments and making that connection with families while you're asleep in bed. You'll be blown away by her passion for helping studio owners around the world. So do make sure you tune in. Until then, I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon PIANOPODCAST for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.